Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And I say, hey, what a wonderful kind of day. If you could learn to work and play and get along with each other.
Welcome everybody to Wednesday Night Wars, episode 2. The Wednesday Night Wars did not, in fact, end after 1 week. So we are back with episode 2. I'm Garrett, and I'm joined, as always, and we're into episode 2. So it is, in fact, as always, by Liam. Liam, how are you doing this week?
We have a 100% success rate of on doing... me being here.
So you're saying you didn't drop out of the... You were thinking of dropping out of the podcast? Is that what you're saying, Liam?
I was not 100% convinced that the podcast nor the Wednesday Night Wars would continue a second week.
Did you really think they'd back... Fair enough, they issued that statement last week, which is the funniest thing I've ever read in my life. But did you really think they'd back out after a week? They got destroyed. But did you really think WWE would back down after 1 week?
No, but part of me thought it'd be really funny if they changed the time by like an hour.
All right, we're moving... Well, I suppose they'd probably move back... So they'd probably move to 9 from 8 to 10 to 9 to 11, which not great. We had a crisis. We had a big baseball crisis yesterday. Were you keeping track of the Cardinals against Atlanta game, I think? I don't know baseball.
I'll have you know that I wake up in the morning of Thursdays in order to watch this show. Like, I go straight from this to AEW. Like, sleeping to AEW is my routine. I don't even check Twitter normally, so... I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, AEW airs at 10 a.m. for you, does it?
Yes.
In the U.S., baseball is on TNT in the U.S., or TBS, technically, in the U.S., and if a baseball game goes long, there was another one scheduled to start at 8:30, AEW scheduled to start at 8, so if the baseball went slightly longer than anticipated, the baseball game that went long would have been bumped down to TNT, AEW would have been bumped down to True TV, and then the second baseball game would have started on TBS. So they would have been preempted. That's just gobbledygook to you, isn't it?
I was like, yeah, okay. How would that have affected me, a Fight.TV viewer?
Yeah, it wouldn't have at all, which is funny. But it turned out that they ended up airing on two channels instead of one. So everything's coming up Tony Khan, I guess?
On his birthday.
Happy birthday, Big Tone. He is
Happy birthday, TK.
He's the reason for the Wednesday Night Wars. So we had two more shows this week that did, in fact, produce 4 more hours of television, AEW and NXT. Last week, we said that we'd alternate back and forth, and then you suggested that the winner of each week should go first the following week. So I think that's a better idea. So you're right. And this is the only time I will concede you're right in the history of this podcast. But so we're going to start with AEW instead.
Once again, I'm coming up with all of... the ideas. I'm a creative juggernaut in the podcasting industry, and everyone should employ me in some manner.
And I have to convince you to do the show. Never mind, frickin'.
don't air our dirty laundry on the podcast.
All right, so we'll jump straight into AEW, which opened with a tremendous match, a really great match between Private Party and the Young Bucks. Like, I expected this match to be great, and it was, in fact, really great. And big news, big story coming out of it, Private Party won.
I fucking loved this match so much.
I saw people having like the tag team match of the year level, and I like this match. I wouldn't go that far. I think this was a really great. I think this is the best match in the history of AEW Dynamite in all two episodes.
It wow, is, that's a big claim.
It was in fact better than Rio and Nyla Rose last week, but it's like
better than MJF versus Brandon Cutler.
Oh, only just. That was an all-time classic.
They're the top two.
But the young was lost. Were you? I know when the brackets first came out, literally everybody's first instinct was the Young Bucks are losing. And then I kind of worked myself into a shoot thinking they weren't going to lose. But then, like, the next match in the bracket was natural because the Lucha Bros are facing Jurassic Express. So everyone looked at those graphics or those brackets and said, they're not going to do the Young Bucks against Jurassic Express or against the Lucha Bros again. And no, they're not, because Private Party won.
Yeah, this is exactly what I thought was going to happen. I know AEW booking so well, I'm basically perfect. I actually did think that it was either going to be the Private Party win or Jungle Express won. And I thought it was more likely that Private Party win.
I was on the exact other side of that. I thought it was more likely that Jurassic Express would pick up a win over the Lucha Bros, because Luchasaurus is very popular.
Well, my thought was that Matt and Nick would just go into a feud with LAX.
Which, based on the end of the show, that is probably what's going to happen. So who's going to win the tag titles now?
Lucha Brothers?
I'd have to say the Lucha Bros are favorites, but it's a wide-open tournament at this stage.
I mean, it definitely makes it more interesting.
It better not be the Dark Order. Like, I'd accept pretty much every other team in this tournament winning except the Dark Order.
Yeah, as much as I love the Super Smash Bros, this ain't it.
No, at least not yet. Like, get them into a program with the Bucks and let them have just killer matches with the Bucks, and then people will accept them. Until then...
So just let them be dumb video game nerds. It's their best thing.
That's true. They haven't been... There was a moment in the show where the lights went out twice, and both times they're like, oh no, are they going to roll out the Dark Order? And both times, they didn't, thank God.
I audibly did say spooky perverts, and then Cody showed up.
Cody is the spookiest of perverts.
Truly the Undertaker of AEW.
So they had Mark Quinnan, the Meltzer driver, and he basically cradled Matt Jackson for the win. And yeah, they're advancing to the next round.
Also, they're super over.
They are, and they're great. These guys just go out there and do cool flips and get super over, and they wrestle the freaking Young Bucks, who are the best tag team in the world for the last decade. And this is what I want out of this television show. This is as I said, it's the best match in the history of this show. I'd like to see a match like this every single week. In front of that crowd, you just put the Bucks or Kenny or Mox or Pac out there every single week to have a match this good, and I will be a happy camper.
This was the first part of the night where we saw production issues. And mainly camera cuts, missing dives, and Jim Ross not knowing people's names.
JR, I defended JR last week because I thought the commentary was actively good, and yeah... He reverted to from this week. We're not allowed to have 2 weeks of good JR. He's doing the intro and he forgot the name of the building. He's like, welcome everybody, we're in Boston in the... And that long pause was the pause he left on the television show before he... I don't even know how to pronounce the name of the building, but I'm not broadcasting. It's a Gannett Arena, I think. But I think he only realized, literally on air, it's like, I don't know how to say this word.
Personally, my favorite JR moment... was him getting scared by the 10-minute call.
Yes. It was in this match where Justin Roberts is 10 minutes gone, 10 minutes remaining. He's like, what? What was that? What? He's so confused.
But, like, it's not like it's a new thing.
No. And, like, he's been calling wrestling since the NWA days. They did that back then, too, didn't they?
Probably. Who could possibly tell?
It's not like he was sitting in WWE land where they don't do time limits and don't do anything remotely resembling sports.
No, like, he was a man of the sport. He should know that there are announcements made to crowds generally.
But yeah, this is a really good match. This was
great. Also wanted to mention, because we didn't get to mention it last week, but I like that both weeks have started with the Road 2 style vignettes.
And I want more of them. I'm kind of bummed that, like, both weeks, like, we've only had it before the first match, which is cool. It's cool to have it before one of the matches, but... I was going to talk about this more during NXT, but NXT have done a bunch of those kind of features, and they've all felt empty to me. Like, they have Donovan Dijakovic go out there and talk about his dispute with Keith Lee, and he just kind of says nothing, and I don't think it really adds anything. And these ones, it's like they tell you who they are, they tell you why this match matters, and then they go into the match, and they're really good, and I would like more of them. I want more of those Road 2 elements incorporated into the show.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't put a focus on it. It's some of the best stuff they do content-wise.
Yeah, way better than being the Elite.
And actually, I'll be super bummed if the Road 2 stuff goes by the wayside with weekly TV.
Because we haven't had one since.
No, but we've still had being the Elite.
Well, we have AEW Dark, which is a sure television show.
Well, you were one to rag on it, and then they gave us Omega versus Janela on that show, so...
Yeah, that's a choice. That's like his first match in the TV era is on AEW Dark in an unsanctioned match. Actually, what I really liked, did you notice John Moxley's win-loss count did not include the unsanctioned win over Joey Janela?
I did not, but that is a nice touch.
Yeah, because it's not sanctioned. It's not an official match, so it doesn't count. It's a good attention to detail there, AEW. While we're on production issues, and I think it was less of an issue as the show went on, but it was a big issue last week, and a big issue at the start of the show. I detest, Liam. I hate their crowd shots.
They are so bad. They don't even pick interesting things to take shots of.
They just cut to some random person in the crowd, not making a reaction, and then that's it, apparently.
Seriously, like, who looks at the WWE product and then goes, you know what we need to add? The boring, lifeless crowd shots.
And, like, I am of the opinion that even if there's someone making, like, the coolest jump up and down face, I that doesn't add anything for me. Like, I want to see the action, I want to see the responses of the competitors, I want to see the emotion of the wrestlers. I don't want to see some doof in the crowd.
And by the time you get to it, they're already at the end of the cheering and like, yeah, we're having such a great time. Also, let's be real, the AEW crowd kind of sucks.
Does it? They're not like... when you watch NXT, you see people who are very, like, into the minutiae of wrestling. You can see them responding to spots. And AEW's crowd is actually pretty different. They don't really respond like that.
I want to clarify, I don't mean as in they are a bad pro wrestling crowd. I mean that each episode and every event, basically, I've seen someone in the crowd that I have learned to detest.
You just hate the people. You just see that guy in the Randy Savage shirt. It's like, I want to hit you in the face.
Oh, I really didn't like him. He was just over-exuberant, big poses. And then this week, there was just some dude in the crowd screaming at the top of his lungs into the ring. Well, and it got picked up by the mic somehow. And it wasn't like... It was like he was having a conversation.
Well, last week you got Orange Cassidy, kid. That kid was great.
Oh, I guess with the bad comes the good.
Yes, and that kid did good numbers for me on Twitter, which is all that matters, as I exploit that, 9-year-old for Twitter clout. And then plugged the podcast in that tweet. So thank you, Orange Cassidy, kid.
So Chris Jericho had a really good segment.
Chris Jericho's great. There is, like, Chris Jericho is one of those human beings whose performer instincts are, like, so leaps and bounds above absolutely everybody else that you can put a live camera on him backstage and he'll come up with a little bit of bubbly and it will go viral. Or you can put him in the ring last week and he can say, who threw this wiener in the ring? And it will go viral. And you can put him in the ring this week where he's doing his big stable intro. People will chant, we the people. And he will shut it down in a way that both adds heat to his stable, but also, like, fuels the brand narrative of AEW. And no one else can do that. No one else is that sharp in that environment to actually be able to do that.
He was so good at everything in this segment. Like, just from the way he put over the members of the group, the way he interacted with the crowd, and everything just felt so natural. You know what I mean? Like, everything felt like, oh, this man is just making this up, and it's coming naturally, and it feels like a superstar talking.
It kind of bummed me out, because it's like, you could have had 20 years of this Chris Jericho.
I mean, where would he have done it?
That's the problem. Where would he have done it? Because, like, we probably saw a lot of this Chris Jericho on WCW. Because I don't think they were, like, heavily scripting his frickin' Man of 1,004 Holds promos. And then, not like his promos were bad in WWE, but they're WWE promos. They're well-delivered corporate-speak nonsense with no emotion whatsoever. And now we just see him cut loose. And as you said, the way he built up all of his stable, because that stable is a weird hodgepodge of people. Like, Sammy Guevara, who we pointed out his penchant for shirtless thumbnails last week, he came out shirtless in this segment. Which he looked
because they didn't have their shirt yet.
That's true. He couldn't come out wearing the shirt. Fair enough. He has an excuse. He was not allowed to wear his shirt because they didn't reveal the name yet.
But Chris Jericho did refer to him as a Spanish god.
Sure. But like this weird hodgepodge of people. You have LAX. You have Jake Hager. You have Sammy Guevara. And you have Chris Jericho. Who, like, on paper, if you showed someone that stable before they debuted on TV, it's like, these people don't fit together. But Jericho made it make sense.
Narratively and, like, just as why would this character want to have these other characters around him? Because, like, they have the narrative perspective of Jericho brought in all of these guys into the company. They were the people that he vouched for. And you also have the, like, hey, of course he wants the undefeated Bellator Jack Hager.
And the added element that there is the big stable in the company is the Elite, and he doesn't want to face all of them alone.
He keeps calling them All Elite, which I really like.
Mm. Actually, you mentioned bringing people into the company. A really nice touch in the opener, where they drove home the fact that the Young Bucks personally recruited Private Party, that they went to House of Glory to give them contracts, and then Private Party beat them. And I really like that touch of, like, they brought them here, and then that's come back to haunt them because they knocked them out of the tag tournament.
Well, that was, like, another big ups for Excalibur, because I think he was the one who brought that up.
Hmm. But Chris Jericho. Chris, just give this man a live mic for 10 minutes every week. He will create memes, he will cut great promos, and he will give you buzz. Like, I thought the first half hour of last week's AEW was superb, and this week's was even better. You had an even better opening match, and an even better, like, second segment promo. God, again, these two opening hours, this whole show should be this.
It's really unfair for Chris Jericho to be ballot stuffing this late in the game.
Do you think he's not going to win awards, is he? He's going to win best on, but he might win best on interviews.
Listen, I don't know, but I think that's a discussion to be made.
I suppose he's main evented most of AEW's big shows, all of which have sold out. Has Full Gear sold out? It might not have. But the other ones have sold out. And these first two TV tapings in which he was both in the main event of both, winning both matches.
He'll be in the main event next week.
And he'll be in the main event next week. Actually, that's an interesting choice as well, that they've main evented all three shows with Chris Jericho. I thought he'd be more of a sometimes food.
Exactly what I was thinking while watching the show. I was like, I had assumed, and all we had heard, like, contract-wise, was that he was going to be kind of a part-time guy. But it seems he's going to be there all the time.
And how better to establish your world champion than him winning with his finish in the first week, winning in with his finish in the second week, and one would assume, unless there's the upset of all upsets next week, he will beat Darby Allin next week. Speaking of Darby Allin, that gives us a nice pivot into the number one contendership match between Jimmy Havoc and Darby Allin, which was a fine match. It was pretty good.
Okay. Jimmy Havoc.
Okay.
I don't know if he is someone I would put on my TV very often.
He feels weirdly out of place in the company. And I'm not sure that might be a good thing, and that, like, he feels very different. But it's also a bad thing in the sense that is he a TV guy? I'm not so sure.
And it's like they're not exactly using him to his strengths. Like, the reason he was so over and such a big deal in Progress was he had heavily edited vignettes that would hype him up as this scary end boss. But when you see him on AEW, he's being, like, doing these backyard growly promos, and he's wrestling in non-hardcore matches on TV.
Mm.
Like, you're fight. How do you expect this man to excel when you're doing nothing to help him excel? Maybe they don't want him to. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they see Jimmy Havoc as a mid-card guy.
But then who do you, like, if you're going to do hardcore matches, you kind of just have to stick him with Janela, don't you? And maybe that's a big TV feud they might do, because they did a little bit of it in the Cracker Barrel whatchamacallits at All Out. Do you just do a full Jimmy Havoc, Joey Janela program? That would probably not be the worst idea in the world.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and or you could do, like, some crazy foes turn friendship tag team deal with them, and I wouldn't mind that.
I'm not sure they would work. I'm trying to picture them as a team.
Yeah, but, like, I don't see what else you really do with Jimmy. Maybe he just becomes, like, mid-card Kane, comes out and scares the mid-card heels.
He did get an inset promo before this match while he was making his entrance, where he basically...
That's what I was referring to, yeah.
He talked about, like, his journey to get there, as opposed to, like, all right, you're a 15-year veteran, blah-de-blah-de-blah. You know, why should we actually care, you know? It's like, yeah. That's like a variation on the I love wrestling promo.
I have another JR note.
All right.
He's doing a very big pet peeve of mine throughout this show, but it started really happening here, where he starts to diminish what the referee is doing.
Yeah.
And it's very annoying, because why are you bringing attention to the mistakes the referees are making?
Unless that's, like, I kind of like the idea that not that referees are characters, but referees have different characteristics. You know,
I don't mind that.
Aubrey Edwards is stricter. Rick Knox might let more go. And if that's what the announcers refer to, and I don't mind then if JR is like, oh, Rick Knox should be more like Aubrey Edwards, because I think that calls attention and brings kind of style to that. But yeah, he has a penchant for just burying referees when they don't do what he likes.
And then it's reliant on the other people like Excalibur to go and say, well, you know, it's the referee discretion and provide excuses.
Mm.
But like, we don't need to have those excuses if you don't point out the problem in the first place.
That is true. I really do like the idea of referees being different. The idea that Bryce Remsburg is more like, oh, he prefers, he'll let them brawl on the outside longer without starting a 10 count. Stuff like that's kind of cool.
I mean, that's cool, but you got to do it with some ounce of subtlety.
That's true. Which Jim Ross doesn't tend to have these days.
I just want to give a quick note to Darby, like, insane distance on the coffin drop in this match.
Yeah, I was actually, I thought it wasn't going to be the finish because he was so far away. I was like, oh, he's definitely going to move. And then, like, no, it was the finish. Okay.
And we get the best possible match, which is Darby and Jericho.
Yeah, like, Jimmy Havoc winning would have been a truly bizarre choice, and they didn't make it. So, I hope they basically take the Road 2 feature on Darby Allin and just slap it onto next week's show. Because that's real good, and they should put that in front of their 1.4 million TNT viewers.
Yeah. All good decisions made so far.
Indeed. So that is Darby Allin against Chris Jericho next week. Speaking of setting up matches for next week, I believe, Bea Priestley and Emi Sakura versus Rio. And did you know, now Liam, this might be revelatory information to you. Did you know Britt Baker is both a doctor and a dentist?
Wait a minute. You're telling me she has time to do other things outside of wrestling?
I know, right? How does she balance being a pro wrestler and working on people's teeth?
Wow. If only she had some sort of a move that would involve the teeth. That would really just tie everything all together.
We're going to do this bit every week until they shut up about her being a dentist.
So never.
Yeah, never.
Emma's back.
And she was probably one of the better parts of this match.
She sure was. How could you hate Emmy? Anyone who doesn't like Emmy is dumb.
The women's match on Dark was not particularly good, and this was a considerable step better.
I've seen some people like say some downer things on this match, but I really liked it. Like it kind of got lost. It kind of lost the crowd, but like at home watching it, I really enjoyed it.
If you were like, Britt Baker wasn't particularly good in this match, I'd be like, yeah, she kind of wasn't. And if you were like, everyone else
I don't really expect Britt Baker to be good in matches.
Yes, but if she's bad in the match, she's bad in the match. But yeah. I thought this was a perfectly fine TV match. As I said, much better than the women's match on Dark, which was kind of actively terrible. And I'm surprised they're going straight to Rio against Britt Baker without doing Britt Baker versus Bea Priestley first.
Maybe Bea Priestley will cost her the match next week.
I would not put it past them, because that match is for the AEW Women's Championship next week. Obviously, they've been building Britt Baker and Bea Priestley. Did you see a photo on Twitter where Bea Priestley seemed to give Britt Baker a black eye?
It seems to be a thing that Bea Priestley is doing.
She concussed her in frickin' Fire, that was Fight for the Fallen, and now she's giving her a black eye. So they have a fun relationship.
Where is Sadie Gibbs?
I have no idea.
Like, I heard so much about her and, like, how, like, great and athletic she is, and I haven't seen her at all.
So, well, Full Gear women's matches are probably Rio against Nyla again and Bea against Britt, right?
I imagine so. I don't mind either of those matches. I like Bea. I like Bea. She's good.
Where are the Kongs gone?
Who?
Aja and Awesome Kong.
Oh, yeah! Whatever happened? They did the stand-in. They never, like... I mean, there's been no follow-up.
Yeah, they did the big tease, and I'm like, I'm into that match. That's a match I want to see, and then nothing. And Kong hasn't been on any of these shows.
And Big TK confirmed that she was signed to the roster.
Yeah, which is like, Awesome Kong is not the force she was. Like, she is nowhere near the force she was, but she's still freaking Awesome Kong, and she's on Glow. So
perhaps they're gonna do something with the inevitable AEW Women's Tag Team Titles.
We got our best friends are in the crowd. Orange Cassidy's there too.
Was this segment a dark segment?
I don't think it was, which was bizarre. Then they cut to black in a very weird, aggressive way, and then the Sean Spears is there.
I gave this leniency because I thought this was a dark segment.
No,
on TV, this was awful.
I'm pretty sure this was on TNT. Actually, that's a weird thing of watching on Fight, because the way they throw to breaks, you sometimes don't even realize they've thrown to breaks.
That happens to me a lot, actually.
Whereas, like, I was watching NXT, and every time they went to break, I know, like, you can't possibly miss it, because it's Mauro frickin' Ranallo. But yeah, on this show, it's like, did they go break? Because I had a note in the first match that I really liked how long they stayed on Private Party winning the match. But they didn't. They went to break at TNT, and that was just on Fight.
There was a couple of things, like, in the lead-up to this, which I hope was on break, because now I don't know. Like, Pac struggling with his mic for a solid minute and a half.
In fairness, I think Sean Spears made his entrance, then they went to break on TNT, and they came back for Mox's entrance.
Well, good, then. So, You've proven me wrong, TNT, and... TK.
Because, yeah, during the break, you had Pac awkwardly come out onto commentary, stumble with his headset, and then Tully Blanchard cut a very, very brief promo.
And Pac was on commentary, and you could actually tell, unlike with Britt Baker.
I like them just being sassy to JR. Anytime JR would ask him a question, he would completely dismiss it.
And then JR would kind of, like, bury his answer.
Yeah, just got salty because Pac was mean to him.
Of course, we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but John gets the big John.
I was so happy. I was like, oh, because my first instinct was like, that's weird to do for John Moxley. But then I was like, wait, that's his big John Cena announcement, which he's now giving to John Moxley. So John Moxley is the new John Cena. Justin Roberts says so.
Lock it in.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, there's a match that happened.
Sure was. Not really. Moxley won. It was fine.
It was the most threeest three I've ever threed.
Yeah. John Spears is a good mid-card hand.
Why isn't Mox getting a mic?
I don't know, because did you see the promo he got on Twitter today?
It was great.
Yeah. So more of Mox cutting promos on Twitter. Put that on the show.
And then we go into the post-match segment with Omega coming out wearing a black t-shirt.
Yes.
And barbed wire cleaning utensils.
As one does. Are they going to do a full unsanctioned match, you think?
I want a death match.
That's...
I want glass and I want tubes.
They're 100% suggesting Kenny and Mox are going to do a death match.
Ah, oh, just Mox taking the One Wing Angel through a bunch of light tubes.
Mm. And I think they could use that to explain away why neither of them are the next number one contender as well, because, oh, it was unsanctioned, therefore it doesn't count toward their records.
Do you think Pac and Mox is the direction after the Omega stuff?
Well, you see, that could have went two ways, because either Mox is upset that he attacked Kenny, or do you think they're going to be a little stable boy? Do you think we're going to go full New Japan on this, where everyone's in a stable?
I'm very interested, because that segment left me with a lot of questions.
Yeah, why is Pac attacking Kenny after he beat him? Fair enough, I like the idea that Pac is kind of pissed. Because, like, realistically, he was overlooked for the title match next week. Because, like, he beat Kenny Omega and he beat Hangman Page. He should have been number one contender rather than frickin' Cody's like, oh, it's the quality of the wins. He just beat two of the top guys in the company.
Yeah, and, like, that was the thing that a lot of the fans on Twitter mentioned. So I'm glad they actually gave some sort of a reasoning. It's a story reason.
Yeah.
Well, they turned it into a story reason. Yeah.
But yeah, where are they going to go? Are they going to go to Pac and Kenny? Are they going to go to Pac and Moxley? Are they going to go to a Pac and Moxley team/stable? Who knows? They could go in literally all three directions.
I was actually really bummed out that Moxley didn't have his long boys.
Oh, why? I like his shorter. I don't like the long boys.
I like the long boys for his AEW gear. I thought it made him seem... That looked like that was main event gear to me.
Hmm. Speaking of main event, you're a master of segues, Liam.
I set him up, you knock him out.
Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara defeated Dustin Rhodes and Hangman Page after Jake Hager interfered and just briefly sideswiped Dustin Rhodes. A really good, I wouldn't say great. I wouldn't say go out of your way to watch this match, but this is a good, solid TV main event.
A really fun match from two people who crashed the Pro Wrestling Tees site. With the induction of their new shirt.
They sure did. Literally, they mentioned it on air in the second segment on the show. And it was down before, people could even go to see. Was it down?
I got to the site as Excalibur was finishing his sentence, and it had already crashed.
Like Pro Wrestling Tees is a pretty big site. I think they're relatively well equipped for traffic, and they took that bad boy down.
Well, they said, like, the Pro Wrestling Tees Twitter mentioned that, like, this has been the first time they had been down in a number of months or whatever.
Yeah. One mention on TNT takes an entire... well, they are a t-shirt company, after all, Liam. You'd expect them to sell t-shirts.
Are you going to be buying the Inner Circle t-shirt?
Probably not. I do have an AEW shirt, but...
What are your thoughts on the name The Inner Circle?
I think it's a good, solid name. I thought that at one stage they were going to call them The List, and I was like, oh, no. But Inner Circle.
I also thought that was where they were going.
But yeah, I'm into Inner Circle. That's pretty good.
Part of me was hoping for a pun on Elite. I don't know where you would go for it, but I was hoping for an Elite-based pun.
Sure.
The Delete.
With bringing Matt Hardy.
When his contract's up in 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, good solid TV main. I want a Jericho and Dustin match. I really want a Jericho and Dustin match.
They must really love Sammy.
I'm so happy. Because like when Sammy was in that opening match, I was like, oh, it's cool that they're putting him in that opening match. He'll get a good rub from Cody and lose. And then he served as a distraction for Jericho. It's like, oh, it's nice that he didn't just disappear. And then he joined the stable at the end of last week's show. It's like, oh, they actually have like legitimate plans for Sammy.
And now he's in the damn main event.
Yeah, in the main event team with Chris Jericho winning. They seem to pivot to Hangman Page against Jake Hager, so he doesn't have a natural program unless he takes on Dustin Rhodes at the pay-per-view, maybe? But it's good that he's in there. Like, he's the pin taker for the group for a while. Everyone probably acknowledges that. It's like, when they need someone in that group to lose, it will probably be Sammy, maybe one of LAX. But for the time being, that's a really good spot for him. It's a considerably better spot than I think most people would have expected for him.
He's seemingly taking the role that Hangman Page took in the Elite when he first joined.
Or the pin taker slowly evolving into future of the company. Whether that works out for Hangman Page, we'll see. Whether it works out for Sammy, we'll also see. But I like Sammy a lot. I've always been very high on Sammy. I think Sammy's cool.
Yeah. Sammy was great. This match was a lot of fun. And it's really nice to see Dustin wrestling.
As I said, give me Dustin and Jericho. Give me a big Dustin Jericho plunder match. That would be so good.
A big, like, Lucha Brawl Jericho, just going, Dustin bleeding buckets.
Bleeding all over the place. It'd be great. I actually thought this match might actually... They might have Dustin or Hangman score the pin on Sammy in this match to set up a title match next week. Because I would have thought, Jericho and Dustin to set a tip toward Jericho and Cody. Perfect TV title match. But no, they went with Darby, which I also approve of. Speaking of Darby... The post-match angle was so good. Like, it's just a big old brawl where everyone comes out and fights, but the timing of everything was so good, and it's culminating in Darby Allin riding down the ramp on his skateboard to attack Chris Jericho. It was so good.
It was essentially the same angle as last week.
It totally was, but the crowd went batshit crazy for it again.
But it's like, does it really matter if you're repeating the same angle if it's great both times?
Yeah, if the crowd goes absolutely nuts, and it served a purpose. It built towards Darby Allin against Chris Jericho next week. It probably built towards the Young Bucks against LAX at Full Gear, and there's probably Jake Hager against Hangman Page in there too. So, like. Home run! You built towards like four different matches in a hot angle that the crowd went nuts for.
I was initially kind of worried about how much TV time they had until Full Gear, with it being 6 weeks, I think. But as we are going through these TVs, I'm becoming more and more confident in their ability to book stuff week to week.
Especially because like the two big matches of Full Gear, Jon Moxley against Kenny Omega and Cody against Chris Jericho, they feel like big men. They feel hot.
Like, and Jack Hager feels like...
Jake! His name is Jake, Liam! Jake.
It's going to take me so much time to get this, okay?
You and Jim Ross.
Jake Hager, the undefeated MMA Bellator. I am so excited for a Jake Hager match, and I cannot explain why.
And Hangman's a good opponent for him. It looked like it was Dustin last week. They brawled to the back this week, so it looks like it's Hangman. I think him and Hangman was a good match.
Maybe do him and Dustin on TV, then him and Hangman at Full Gear.
That would make sense. Dustin, as Sammy is the fall taker for Inner Circle, Dustin is the fall taker for the Elite. Is Dustin in the Elite? I guess he kind of is.
I'll have you know that on Being the Elite this week, he acknowledged that he was not in the Elite.
Oh, so he's still the natural. He's still the Lone Ranger.
What the story was, and was the setup to this match, actually, was Dustin was yelling at Hangman and going, "Hey, man, I will not even in the group," and I went out there, and Hangman said, "I'll make it up to you," and that's why the tag match was made.
Yeah. I don't watch, like, I can't stand being the Elite, if I'm honest.
I skip most of it, but there's match announcements that I like to catch.
It's like, it's never been my humor, and that's fine. It's for the people whose humor it is, they really like it, but it's never been mine. I always watch the Road 2s, because the Road 2s are always great. But that's AEW Dynamite. I think a little bit of a lull in the middle. Some not great matches in there, but tremendous opening half hour. Good building blocks. Everything made sense. Everything built towards something. Everything had like an actual purpose. And then that main event and main event angle were both also tremendous.
I liked this show better than last week's show.
Yeah, if they fill out that middle hour, like the first half hour and last half hour were both like just super duper home runs. I think if they fill out that middle hour with a little bit of better wrestling, I think that's really all it needs. It's like closer to like three and a half star matches rather than two and a half star matches. You know, that's really the only difference it is. Once they nail that, and once these mid-card guys start actually getting over, I will be on board.
Maybe they should just have four squash matches on the show.
Speaking of, I assume you're pivoting to WWE NXT on USA Network, which I almost admire the degree to which this show stayed in its lane after they got so thoroughly smushed last week. Like, this was...
It's astounding.
It's like, talk about sticking to your guns and believing in what you're doing. Maybe to a fault. We'll find that out. I think perhaps to a fault. But, like, this show was the least reactionary show it could possibly have been.
We were sitting here expecting big moves, main roster talent,
I think the people that are, like, main roster talent, they're going to put The Undertaker on the show. I think they're not going to do that.
I didn't think The Undertaker was going to show up. I did think maybe, I don't know, The Revival would show up, something.
Mm. Actually, that's not a bad idea. Past NXT guests of the week coming down to do a match. Make it a weekly thing.
The problem
is
you can't have them win every time.
That's true. I'm surprised at the degree to which this was just another episode of NXT. After, as they said, they got beaten comprehensively. As comprehensively, like, more comprehensively than most people expected. And they did an episode of NXT.
Like, there's something to be said about the bowls and them just, like, going with the flow regardless. Again, like you said, we don't know, will this work out? Will it not? Like, it's easy to judge it, but let's see how it goes.
Yeah, as I said, I admire sticking to your guns, even if those guns are misfiring. We opened with a really good match, Drew Gulak against Lio Rush. Lio Rush won the now NXT Cruiserweight Championship. Not as good as the Matt Riddle and Adam Cole match last week, not even close, but a good opener.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about the actual match, but what I do have to say is I kind of feel bad for Gulak coming in and dropping the belt straight away, because I was kind of hoping for some integration with the NXT Cruiserweight title. But I understand that they're doing this big story with Leo and he's becoming a focal point on the brand. But yeah, I'm kind of bummed for Gulak because I really have enjoyed Gulak's stuff on the main roster, some of the few main roster content I've been watching.
I feel like the post-Buddy Murphy era of 205 Live is just entirely forgotten. You know, it exists, it happened. There's been two champions. We had Drew Gulak and Tony Nese. But I think people have just totally checked out on that show. So I'm not like entirely against just hitting the reset button with Lio Rush on TV. But then I kind of agree that I think Drew Gulak was a much better champion than Nese was and was doing a good job. And now he's not champion anymore.
I just hope he doesn't get lost in the shuffle that is the 10,000 people NXT have employed.
The roster is far too big, and like AEW is a big roster, you know, like the likes of SCU have been barely featured on the show, the likes of the Lucha Bros have been barely featured on the show, but AEW knows that they have a core like 8 people that are always going to be on the show every week. The likes of Kenny Omega and Pac and Jon Moxley and the Young Bucks and Chris Jericho are always going to be on the show every week, and then the rest are kind of a revolving door, whereas like this entire show is a revolving door, like no sign of freaking...
I'd say with the exception of the Undisputed Era, who just because of their sheer numbers will always be featured in some manner.
Mm.
But like, there was no Gargano on this show.
And most notably, he had a couple of video packages, but I thought it was a truly baffling choice to have no Finn Balor on this show.
My only like guess is that they're trying to hype up his return to get some sort of a boost, like a ring return, but yeah. How much of a boost is he really going to give you? They got to try.
Like, Finn Balor was a star in NXT, and then he went to the main roster, and then, like, he won the Universal title, got hurt, and then everything after what happened when he got hurt, basically, he's been a mid-card goof for that entire time since. So, like, is he a star still? I don't know. Can they make him a star again? Maybe. But I still would have put him on this show.
I think it's not very hard to rehabilitate Finn Balor in front of that audience.
Mm.
But I get them wanting to hype up the return more than just, oh, he returned and now he's back.
I will say,
maybe not doing it in the week after you got crushed in the ratings, but...
Pet peeve in this match. Drew Gulak had a cyclone crash where he hit it in a way that very clearly set Leo Rush up to put his foot in the ropes, and that annoyed me.
Well, you know what else annoyed us in this match?
Oh, dear. All right. Fire myself up. Mauro Ranallo. You know what really upset me on this show? I expected out of Mauro. Beth Phoenix was suddenly just as bad.
Beth Phoenix in a certain tag match later on in this show.
We'll get to that. Okay, Mauro quotes, ladies and gentlemen. Gulak, known as the Philadelphia Stretcher, that city known for its double toughness, the mascot Gritty, well, they don't come much grittier than Drew Gulak.
That one was so good, I wrote it down as well.
The thing is, if Mauro had one of these a show, if he had just one, they'd be like, oh, that's a good line. You know?
He has like four a match.
There was four of them in this match. Man of the hour, trying to attract the Cruiserweight title like a moth to the flame. How do you spell Leo? L-I-T. That doesn't even make sense.
I physically recoiled from the screen as you said that.
The action hotter than the Iron Throne in a battle for the Cruiserweight throne. Get it, Liam? That's a Game of Thrones reference.
I don't get it.
Oh, like, as I said, if that freaking Gritty line was the only one of those he did on this show, I'd be like, oh, that's look at Mauro doing his funny little thing. But there was like four of them in this 10-minute opening contest on NXT. It's like, stop! Just stop, please! And like, there was a point in the show where he's like, I pride myself on my pop culture references. It's like,
we know that you pride yourself on your pop culture references. Like, say what you want about Mauro and his insaneless, inane pop culture references. At least he knows the competitors' names.
That is true.
At least it wasn't Leo Rush versus his adversary the entire time.
I suppose. He does. Like, as I said, Mauro can be the best announcer in wrestling. That's what makes Mauro so annoying. That, like, when Mauro's on his game and great and not, like, being self-indulgent and dopey, he can be legitimately the best announcer in wrestling. And then, but he's just freaking self-indulgent and dopey all the time.
I don't know what it is. Maybe he just knows it. He knows that he can get away with it and he likes it. I always assumed that it was a main roster Vince choice.
Mm.
But like now I've seen it in NXT, it's clearly something he enjoys. So
we then reached squash match section of NXT, which was the rest of the hour, basically. There was one good squash match. I thought Rhea Ripley against Aliyah was a really good squash match.
But it was one we had already seen.
That's true. But she did the thing where she lifted her up in like the Texas Cloverleaf and held her there. And that looks really cool.
That was really cool. My one note for this is Rhea is very strong.
She is very strong. I thought you hated her accent.
Oh, I don't want to get into the accent stuff.
Don't you want to? Liam D'Envy, it's like she has a bad Australian accent and I wanted him to do a taxonomy of Australian accents.
I will break it down more in the future.
All right.
Well, but there are a variety of Australian accents. Some of them are pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are cool. And some of them are annoying.
I'm sure the listeners can decide which one you have.
I have the nice one.
Okay.
Rhea Ripley has the annoying one. Kyle Fletcher has the annoying one.
Liam is Australian, by the way. He can say this.
Well, it's like there's a ton of different American dialects. I assume there's a ton of different Irish accents. Do you hate the Dublin accent?
I do. I hate most Irish accents. Well, Dublin in particular. Dublin. Ugh.
Like, to me, I love all Irish accents because they all sound nice to me. Mm. Or they sound cool to me. And people think that about the Australian accent too. But I, like, there's a certain level of, like, chav that comes out in Australian accents. And Rhea has it, and Kyle Fletcher has it.
The Nightmare has moved from Elm Street to NXT. Beth, you don't have to do this. Blink twice if he's forcing you to do this.
Seriously, like, I expect it from him, but Beth, really?
Squash match number two, surprisingly, the other way around, Breeze Angle got squashed by the Forgotten Sons, who I also forgot existed, because Gunner's there, it's Gunner!
I love Gunner. I love Gunstorm.
I miss Gunner's music. They should buy the music from TNA.
You forgot to mention that the Biker Men murdered the French Canadians.
I was gonna get to that. I don't like that because then they replaced them in the match. I'm like, how is that the precedent? How this works?
Fun little interlude about this match.
Mm-hmm.
When Fandango and Tyler Breeze made their entrance, I thought it was Heavy Machinery coming back, and I was like, really? That's your main roster pool? Heavy Machinery.
No, it was just... in fairness, they did get rid of the siren at the start of Breeze Angle's music, which... sirens belong to Scott Steiner. Thank you. I'm so bummed that Breeze Angle are somehow even more goofs in NXT. I was like, oh, they're going back to NXT. They're going to be, like, retooled as a cool tag team. And it's like, no, they're just bigger goofs than they were in the main roster.
That being said, I hope they have a different stripper shtick each week.
I left out a Maro quote in the last match.
Oh, well, we need to hear it.
She's just blown Aliyah away faster than candles on her birthday cake.
Wow.
That's deep.
Do you have the full Tyler Breeze Fandango quote from Beth in this match?
Do I? Did I write it down?
About getting her pipes cleaned?
Oh, no, I didn't. I didn't write that down, but it was certainly... That was certainly an exchange on commentary.
I had to take my headphones out.
Did it upset you that much?
It gave me that much secondhand cringe.
Mm.
And I don't even like the whole cringe thing, but like that legitimately made me recoil. I didn't like that at all.
The worst part was like the follow-up from Mauro and Nigel. It's like, oh, okay.
By the way, did you notice that everyone has flags now?
Do they?
In their backstage, like, pre-match, we'll get up to fight, everyone has a flag behind them now, like the old UFC walkout flags.
Hmm.
Last week, Shayna had it, and I understood it, because she's the MMA fighter shtick. But during this show, we saw Kushida with a flag, and Imperium with a flag.
Everyone loves their flags. Everyone has, they're going to sell them on terrible-looking t-shirts.
That makes a lot of sense now.
The flags are probably so better than the logo shirts.
I was so perplexed as to why everyone had fight teams now.
Yeah. Well, they're doing...
What did you think of Kushida's sparring partners being Breezango?
I don't know. I don't like that Kushida's just the Back to the Future guy without any context. I don't think that really works. Because he did that entrance like 5 years into a New Japan run. So everyone knew who Kushida was. So it's like, oh, they'll accept the fact that he's now the Back to the Future guy. But he's just the Back to the Future guy on NXT.
You're saying he hasn't earned his Back to the Future fandom?
No, they haven't introduced it organically to the audience, Liam. You have to introduce Marty McFly and Doc Brown.
Speaking of introducing the audience organically to things, Cameron Grimes' hat.
Speaking of the Animal Kingdom, I've compared Cameron Grimes to the Honey Badger. Persistent, resourceful, unwavering, and most of all, ferocious. Beth, you don't have to.
You have to have a couple of good Boa quotes in there, too.
Oh, there was like something along the lines of, oh, he restricted him like a Boa, he constricted Boa, yeah. He made a Boa constrictor joke, okay? That's the moral of the story here.
It's the moral of the story.
Yeah, sure did. This was a squash match where, Boa was kind of slightly distracted by the entrance of Killian Dane.
That was the weird thing, right? Boa wasn't distracted at all. The referee was distracted.
And Cameron just hit his move in one like he did against Sean Maluda a couple weeks ago. Beat him in 6 seconds. And then Killian Dane beat the heck out of Boa afterwards. And hit a Vader bomb, which would have delighted Tony Schiavone.
So, Killian Dane.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm going on about here.
Yeah, I...
Do you want to save this?
We'll save it for when he actually does that. It feels so... He was born in 1985, Liam. I'm not saying Belfast wasn't a tense place in 1985 or when he was growing up in the 90s, but he grew up mostly in peacetime, And he has freaking imagery of, like, car bombs in his entrance video. And I'm like, that's kind of gross.
I think we'll give you a taste of this discussion, but we'll wait until he actually has a match before we break it all down.
You know what I really don't like about NXT? It's kind of a nitpick, but every time they do an announcer on cameras, every time they have the three announcers there talking to you, they always play the theme song of whatever was the segment right the way through them talking. They did this with Rhea Ripley. They did this, I think, later in the show, both times when they're plugging whatever the press conference deal is they're doing this Friday. But, like, just in the background, you have Rhea Ripley's just big, loud theme beating you over the head. It's like, just fade the music out. Just, come on. I don't have to be...
That this was show's, her brutality.
This show is just relentless. It's like, let me breathe.
Yeah, there's no... It's funny, how can a show feel so jam-packed yet so void of anything interesting at the same time?
We have promos from both Damian Priest and Pete Dunne.
I love the Damian Priest one a lot.
At least the sarcophagus of celebrity makes, I think, slightly more sense.
I love the Damian Priest video.
I
thought it was shot super interestingly. I'm really hyped up for a Pete Dunne Punishment Martinez match, which I never thought I would actually be interested in.
Yeah, it was much better than the Keith Lee and Dijakovic videos, which I actively disliked, because I'm sick of these two doing the we're gonna one-up each other, we're gonna do better, where it's like, I've seen this match, you've done it twice, add another layer. I don't want to hear
you've done it three times.
How'd they have to? And, like, if you watch them on the indies, it's like 700 times. I get you're doing the rubber match, but add another layer to this thing other than, oh, we're natural opponents. We bring out the best each other. We're going to go out there and do cool shit. Which they do go out there and do cool shit, but God, give me something different in this feud.
I'm very excited for the tag team that they will eventually form.
Them against Undisputed Era, against Red Dragon, that would be a good match.
NXT desperately needs some tag teams, so...
They do. Speaking of good matches, Isaiah Scott lost to Roderick Strong after interference from the Undisputed Era in a, again, good, not particularly great match, but I think it was a good TV match.
I think this match served a similar point to the Young Bucks versus Private Party match, where Isaiah Scott got some legitimacy with a loss, except it was a loss and not a win, obviously. So, not to the same extent, but I liked the point, and yeah. I thought they delivered the point.
It was... this is my problem with NXT, is that, like, this was a good wrestling match, but there's just not a ton to mine from it. Because, like, Strong
won.
The post-match is more important than building toward whatever comes next. Scott is more of a prop to have a good match with Strong. And maybe they'll get to Scott someday, but, like, he's the plucky loser here. And I'd like the matches to be more meaningful on this show.
Yeah. That's the problem with all these matches. They just kind of feel lifeless.
Yeah. Post-match. All right. We had Velveteen Dream come out. And he said that Roderick Strong is going to lose the title, and then we're all going to see how small his dick is.
Yes.
I'm not joking there. I'm not so, that's exactly... He even had visual aids of Roderick Strong naked on a couch with the belt covering his penis, and then they removed the belt and he didn't have a dick.
If you for some reason decided to not watch NXT and just listen to this, we will describe it in detail that Roddy Strong has a little peener, according to Velveteen Dream.
It's not even he has a little peener, apparently he has no peener.
He has a censored peener.
That's true.
The interesting thing about this is, like, you know what makes Velveteen Dream cool?
Mm-hmm.
Just him being a cool guy. But you know what will make him even cooler? If he does main roster dick comedy.
This felt very Vince.
Like, I was half expecting to hear Michael Cole in the background snickering, pretending to laugh at it.
Yeah. This is what they have for Roderick Strong and Dream. Like, this is what they've got. And I'm like, okay. Well, all right. This is what you're going to throw against AEW. This is my problem with NXT. I have a lot of problems with NXT this week. That they try so hard to present themselves as an alternative. Like, it's very much a tell, don't show. You have Mauro say it, you have Nigel say it over and over again. This is NXT, this is different, this is wrestling as you love it. And then they do this, which is, like, just so plucked straight out of main roster comedy. It's straight out of Mike and Maria. Like, you'd expect to see this with Maria Kanellis on Raw, just embarrassing Mike. And I'm like, what are you doing?
As much as I hated this segment and hated the picture, was one thing I did enjoy was when they put the original picture up that Undisputed Era were like, yeah, he's a cool guy, look at the picture. Like, what, this isn't making fun of us?
Undisputed Era is the best part of the show. Both, all four of them are great wrestlers. But, like, they have this weird, like, frat bro vibe that works as, like, obnoxious heels. It's really good. I like them.
I also really liked that on Twitter, Roddy's wife came out to dispute these allegations, stating that she was in a wheelchair after wedding night.
This is Brian Cage and Melissa Santos all over again, is it?
Oh, I forgot about that.
The yummy... She came on Twitter to say how good and yummy his penis is, Liam. Come on.
This also, like, goes to the idea that, like, hey, let's just morph... the Undisputed Era and Shayna's group, like the horsewomen together, and just make them a super group.
Undisputed horsewomen. Perfect.
I really like that. I really like that.
Yeah. After the match, Tommaso Ciampa came out. Undisputed Era ran away, and Ciampa's like, I am home.
Tommaso still feels like a big deal to me.
Yeah, because the crowd likes him, and obviously he's fresh and new and back from injury. And we'll see how that goes.
He's one of these few guys that when you hear his music, you're like, oh shit, I should actually be paying attention to the show now.
And his music has, like, I'm not going to say it's an Austin glass shatter, but it starts with, like, that kind of glass shatter. It's like, ooh, Tommaso.
Tommaso?
Tomato Chomper, there you go.
Tomato Chomper. And then, of course, we go to the main event.
You forgot Bianca Belair against Dakota Kai.
That was a purposeful choice, because I was going to emphasize how it should have been the main event next.
Yeah, well, that would mean the main event would have been another 15 minutes longer, which I also don't approve of.
You know what? Fair.
Bianca Belair beat Dakota Kai. Dakota Kai's big comeback has come to an end. They set up, basically, Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair in a number one contendership match, I guess. That's both laid claim to a title shot, so I assume that's what is coming next.
Man, Belair was super blown up trying to cut a post-match promo.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. I was just like, I didn't expect that from her, because she's kind of like got this super athlete vibe going to her.
Mm. Yeah, this match was... It existed.
I had more faith in the Dakota Kai return run, but alas, it was not to be.
They've given it, as I said, they've given it to Tegan Nox. Because when I watched Dakota Kai even make her return a couple of weeks ago, I was like, why didn't they drive home the in return from? Oh, poor Dakota Kai. Yeah.
Dakota Kai has some cool, like, offense.
Yeah, she does some cool stuff, but her place on the pecking order is now clear.
Exceptionally.
Then we went to our main event, which is Walter against Kushida. Walter in the WWE. I was watching this match. It's weird because he's not the same wrestler. And not like he's not a good wrestler, because Walter is great and Walter can do lots of different things. But Walter basically goes 50-50 with guys in WWE. And it's very strange. I don't think I like it. That's not why I think Walter is special. I think him and Kushida had a good match. But it's strange to see him, the guy who's known as, like, pro wrestling's best final boss, the guy who like, just getting a move in on Walter lends you credibility. That's been the way Walter has worked everywhere he's been for the last, like, 3 years, ever since he really broke out. Just, like, going toe-to-toe with Walter and losing, even if Walter takes 80% of the match, is a credibility enhancer. And here, he just goes 50-50 with everybody, and it's a kind of bizarre.
I'm going to explain it to you. It's the WWE.
Sure.
It's a different game. Like, that's not how they act. That's not how they book.
I don't like it.
Like, by being the final boss, it means now that he has a bunch of cronies, not that he is a tough final boss to beat.
Yeah, and, like, they had a good match, and Walter still looks like Walter because he's frickin' Walter. But, yeah...
this match was a match, and it's funny because, like, if you had of said, like, oh, this match is happening in Rev Pro, I would have probably been way more excited for it. But it probably would have been the same exact match.
Well, it probably wouldn't have been. Walter would have taken more, and Kushida's comebacks would have meant more.
I don't know. There's something about Walter outside of his very specific companies that doesn't click as much with me personally. Like, obviously in WXW and OTT, and even in Progress, I feel like he really is Walter, you know? He's world-class, he's top tier. And otherwise, he's just kind of, it's Walter.
Mm, the guy with Imperium.
Yeah, the guy with Imperium.
You know what? Like, if Imperium is knockoff Ringkampf, WWE Walter is just gonna knock off Walter.
Yeah, like, that's what it comes down to, really. Like, this is just Walter, but toned down.
It feels like somebody trying to reverse engineer what makes Walter special, instead of just letting him be special.
That just, yeah, but that just feels like WWE to me.
Well, that's always WWE. That is NXT. You know what? You brought me down on NXT. I didn't dislike this show. And then basically every single thing I said for the last half hour has been, you know what I don't like about NXT?
I bring out the negativity in you, clearly.
All right, we have some Mauro quotes that I missed, actually. I forgot about that.
Oh, let's go. The best of Mauro Ranallo on NXT on USA Week 4.
Yeah. Like Travis Scott, Isaiah Scott is always in sicko mode, and when it comes to his in-ring skills, this Scott is sick with it. I don't know who Travis Scott is, but I assume...
Oh, you don't know Travis Scott?
No, I'm not in touch with the culture. I'm the reverse, like, of Mauro.
Much like Wale, he is a hip-hopper.
Mm. So I assume to people who know who Travis Scott is, that's pretty repulsive.
Yeah, that's why I buried my hand in my heads. Sorry. My head in my hands.
You've lost your ability to speak after hearing Mauro quotes.
Mauro has infected my brain.
Strong, a native of the Sunshine State, proving to be as tough as working under the Florida sun for minimum wage.
Heavy shot.
The heavy shot, indeed.
At the working class.
Like Bushido, the way of the warrior. He may be taking a beating, but he keeps on ticking, said of Kushida.
That's for his friend Bush Barnett!
In comes Fandango, and he's all about that ballroom blitz, and it's sour not sweet for Wesley Blake.
That one's just bad. Like, it's not even fun.
No. As I said, if he'd rolled out just the gritty one at the start of the show, I'd like, huh, good one. All of these, stop it. I'm going to start tweeting these. We tweeted the gritty one last night. So if you follow War Games Pod, you will be subjected to the worst of Mauro as well. You can't
escape. The
gritty
one was so exceptionally amazing that it warranted me sending it to you word for word before you even got around to NXT.
I posted that in the Voices of Wrestling Slack last night, and people were like, that is not real. I've made this up. As I said, I liked this show more before I started talking about it than after. Match of the week, I think we probably both agree, Bucks against Private Party.
Yep, that's my match of the week as well.
And show of the week is, I still think, middle of AEW, still not great, but I think on the whole, it's a better show.
I also give my vote to AEW this week. No need for democracy!
But we shall go to democracy nonetheless to see what they said. 193 votes on the poll. 79% AEW, 21% NXT. And I acknowledge this will somewhat be a popularity contest over time, but it's very clear who is the most popular.
We ask you to remain objective and unbiased like we are when you cast your vote on the War Games Pod Twitter.
And please only vote after you've watched both shows.
Like, I wait to vote until I watch both shows. You can wait to vote until you watch both shows.
There is no way we can actually enforce that, though. So, winners of week two, on a two-week winning streak, probably both in the ratings and in creative, AEW.
Congratulations to Big TK, and have a happy birthday.
This is his birthday. His victory is his birthday present.
The greatest victory of all.
Before we go, where can people find you on Twitter, Liam?
At Larrikin, LARRIKN.
We are not the only people covering AEW on the Voiceless Wrestling Podcast Network. I really meant to plug this last week and I forgot and I felt really bad. You can listen to Everything Elite, I'm pretty sure every Friday, on the Voiceless Wrestling Podcasting Network to talk about a lot more than AEW Dynamite. They talk about AEW Dark and all the news coming out of AEW every single week. And if you want more of your WWE fix, well, the Voices of Wrestling Network, Podcasting Network has that for you too. I don't know why, but not that Shake Them Ropes is a bad show, that you'd want more of WWE. Shake Them Ropes covers Raw, SmackDown, NXT, NXT UK, and 205 Live every week. So if you want to know what happens on those shows, Shake Them Ropes, Jeff and Chris is the place to go. You can follow me on Twitter at GarrettKidneyGA or ETTKIDNEY. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at WarGamesPod. Thank you so much for listening, and bye-bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.